The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I am at Archives Wine and Spirit Merchants on James Street in downtown St. Catharines with the owner, Robbie Raskin. Robbie, thanks so much for being part of the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. It's something I've been looking forward to doing for a couple months, so this is going to be fun.
You know what? Let's start here. Congratulations. We met at the VQA Awards. I won for Media Influencer. You won for Hospitality. Let's talk about that for a little bit. How important, how nice of a day was that for you and for this restaurant bar to be recognized?
Yeah, it was incredibly gratifying to just to not you know, you like to be sort of recognized by your peers to know that you're not doing it for the money. I mean, you'd like to, but it's not happening really.
Yeah.
At least at this point. So it's really cool to sort of get recognized. And I know when I started this, a big goal that I used to talk about was I want to be able to walk into different wineries, know everyone and know what's going on and sort of be recognized and be a part of the winemaking community here in Niagara and just sort of be a part of this scene. And so it was really quite gratifying. It was a pleasant surprise. I didn't really know it was coming. I had an inkling a couple days before, but I knew there were a lot of really, really cool people in the room, and sort of to be recognized among them was bit of a thrill for sure.
It is. And just knowing those advocates are out there and they're just, they're noticing the work that you're doing in terms of pushing for the wines of Ontario. So we'll get to the journey and this place, and you poured this rosé. Actually, where's the rosé from? Where have you poured?
Yeah, so we're drinking something cool. I wanted to pull out something that you can more or less only find here at Archives. So we're drinking the Lost Vineyards 2021 rosé, The Sail, it's called. So Lost Vineyards is a fairly new project out of Niagara-on-the-Lake. They've got a full estate. They're growing on site. They're doing production on site, but not open to the public. They sell to their wine club only, and then to me at Archives, and I believe they're also at Trinity Market in Toronto, but that's about it. And they're sort of cutting no corners. It's a lovely, just a husband and wife team, and they're doing some really cool stuff. So this rosé is a sort of Bordeaux-inspired blend. It's Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and Merlot. Pretty classical. It's nice for a hot day, like we're in, the 27th of August, so it's sunny out there, but it's also got a little body, a little structure to it. It's a food-friendly, sort of complex, almost more of a sipping rosé. It's not just, a porch pounder, which is nice too.
Yeah, actually, sipping rosé is the perfect way to describe it. There is a little bit more of a heaviness there. There's nothing wrong with just light and easy going. But yes, this is a rosé that at least makes you think about, oh, what's going on behind that label?
Yeah, it's a little more complex. And yeah, there's definitely that weight to it on the palate. And it's still got a very kind of a brightness to it. It's still got some fresh acidity to it and speaks to 2021 as what we mostly think of as a tough vintage here in Niagara, but can produce some really nice rosés and some really nice, more acid-driven wine. Some, wines like that we do really well in Niagara actually can shine on, off years like that.
Damn it, now I'm going off topic. I think one of the ways, if people want to realize just how Niagara, like all the classic wine regions, is terroir-driven, and however you want to define terroir, everyone fights about it, that's fine. Everyone can fight about it. But the difference, let's just say just Pinot Noir, the difference between 19 versus 20 versus 21, like 19 and 21 would be more similar. But the difference, let's just say between 2020, bigger, hotter year versus 21, cooler, rainier year. It's night and day every time I ever try, same varietal, same place, but just those 2 years.
Yeah, and I've been really, really into the 19 Pinots, Gamays, Riesling lately. They're really coming into their own. I think some of that acidity is starting to round off a little bit, and you're just getting these beautiful, complex wines. Like, I haven't had any real killer, Cab Sauv from 2021, let's say.
No, you're probably not going to. Yeah.
But that's the treat, is that you have these different vintages, and it's not just somewhere like, Bordeaux, where the wines are more or less made the same way and people are more or less looking for the same thing. And, this was a great year and this was not a great year. Whereas here in Niagara, what was a great year for a big red Niagara on the lake is, what was a terrible year for Pinot Noir. And 2019, we think about as this not such a great year, but we have these absolute gems coming out of the more Burgundian style varieties, the Pinots, the Gamays, and the whites. And then 2020 comes around, and maybe it wasn't a great year across the board for Pinots, but it's the most beautiful year ever for Cabs, right? So we have sort of both things that we can do. And when you think about it that way, it's almost every vintage, unless something goes really catastrophically wrong, is going to be good for something.
It just depends on the varietal and also your style. You might love 20 Pinot Noir if you're more about Sonoma or things like that.
That's it. If I'm looking at 2020, I'm going to like the Creekside Iconoclast or Big Head or, you know, a lot of the Niagara on the Lake producers. If I'm going to 2019 or 2021, you know, more benchy style producers like Batchelder or Kaloose are really going to shine.
Let's get off wine for a second and talk about entrepreneurialness. I don't think that's a word. When did you start? When did Archive Wine and Spirit Merchants open?
Well, there's a whole long story there, but
I know.
Buckle up. But the whole, if I can trace like the sort of blind steps that led to where we are now, November 19th, 2019 would be the starting day. I was, I kind of came into wine backward, but or sideways. I was studying at Niagara College in spirits distilling. Like a bunch of us at mid-November had just started incorporating companies of, you know, oh, I want to make a distillery. I want to do this. I want to do this. So I thought, yeah, I'd love to have a little boutique-y whiskey brand doing rye. And so I incorporated a business, Halliburton Independent Bottlers Limited, which is still the corporate name of this company. Yeah.
It's very, very fancy. That sounds like a very professional name.
Well, that was it. I know. Yeah. I was punching above my weight there. Yeah. But
how old were you, by the way? At that time.
Oh boy, I have to, I don't know.
You're gonna have to minus.
29 now, so what's however many years ago?
24.
That was. Thank you.
Yes. I minus five.
Thank you. I couldn't have done that. it's not my forte. I can do wine, but
So
I was just sitting around, probably had a couple bottles of wine and went on and incorporated this thing and, you know, started playing around with a website and logos and all the easy things. And I was speaking to a lot of distillers there, and so I had this idea to launch this boutique rye primarily whiskey bottling company where we'd be doing higher end smaller producers, a lot of the same things that we're, you know, talking about with the wine here now, but you know, this was going to be in whiskey. As I sort of progressed down that road, I quickly realized it was impossible to do this in Ontario, just because at this point it was still a complete LCBO monopoly system. There was, you know, we didn't have bottle shops even yet, and so I just realized there would be nowhere to sell it, and I didn't have millions of dollars to make my own distillery and produce enough, you know, cheap and cheerful whiskey that could go all over the province to the, you know, 700 odd LCBOs. So I was thinking, all right, I guess I have to move to Alberta now, you know, and I didn't want to do that. So I developed this nice healthy chip on my shoulder against the system. My year at Niagara College ended coinciding with the start of COVID-19. And so now we're talking, you know, spring 2020. As that took root, bottle shops started becoming legally feasible to do anyway in Ontario when they legalized takeaway alcohol at restaurants. This is probably May of 2020. And so about then I started thinking, oh, you know, this could be an interesting idea. And I was in and out of Niagara during lockdowns and had been getting into the wine a little bit because, you know, what else were we doing during lockdowns if not drinking? And so I was going to a lot of the wineries and sitting outdoors and tasting and really kind of getting into it. And I had a lot of friends in winemaking at Niagara College at this point. And so I sort of thought it would be cool to take advantage of these new, you know, loopholes, these new takeaway laws, and start something like this and have a, you know, nicely curated wine and spirits shop. And so this sort of came about gradually over lockdowns. And finally, by it was December of 2020, we had picked this property at 39 James Street and signed a lease, which we started in January 1st, 2021, and started work there. And then that's where things got sort of messy.
You are, we'll get to all of that. But I mean, you are definitely an entrepreneur. You're doing this at 25. That is a young age to incorporating names, starting a business, thinking about whiskey distillery, then and then recognizing what's going on politically, and then looking at that from a business standpoint, going, okay, the door is now open because of COVID. It was one of the silver linings of it. We can talk about why the fuck that hadn't been happening for years earlier.
Yeah, it's a shame it took that many millions of people around the world to get killed for us to have bottle shops.
Yeah. So the entrepreneurial spirit is definitely big into you. What I'm wondering, what was James Street like on January 1st, 2021?
Yeah, it's weird. I think I got, because downtown St. Catharines, I'm from Toronto originally, and I had only been in Niagara since 2019, you know, September when I came down for the college. The neighborhood was sort of coming on the upswing after what I hear were really decades of sort of stagnation in, you know, central St. Catharines. It was It was not good, and there's still a ways to go, but there were new restaurants opening around the neighborhood, and some of them were getting some real acclaim nationally. Dispatch, Odd Bird, Wellington Court, Bolete. There are a number of sort of these really cool restaurants that were coming together, and there's this sort of nascent community of young people with ideas, and it seemed like the sort of all the ingredients were there for this neighborhood to get cool. It was just sort of needed time to kind of come together, and I think that process is still continuing, but it is happening.
Yeah.
But we were also seeing a lot of places closing with lockdowns, and it was sort of good things and bad things happening simultaneously. We had road closures, and so you had pedestrians flowing all over the neighborhood, and we had these patios filling out, and it looked like this really lively place on the weekends. And then you also had places closing, and we had all sorts of things going sideways with COVID. Sort of was going in, you know, two different directions, it felt like.
Yeah, and the reason I brought it up is I've driven through St. Catharines, but I haven't walked around a lot. And when I was just walking to get parking, and by the way, parking here is so much easier than downtown Toronto. It's not even close. But what I noticed is there was like restaurant after restaurant, some clubs. And what I just noticed is this area seems to be, what you said, it seemed to be on the up in terms of as an entertainment area. Like I'm just looking around, I'm seeing, oh, there's a new condo that's being built. And I bet when you look at that new condo, you're thinking, huh, maybe 13% of the people there will eventually come inside here.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So you can see the skeleton of what this area can be. And I just sort of noticed that, and just from a very rudimentary 3-minute walk.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't realize it at the time, but I'm very much just like part of this COVID era Toronto wave of people who have spread out from Toronto and then just like gentrified, you know, Kitchener and Guelph and St. Catharines and Hamilton. We've all sort of moved out from Toronto as this wave. And I thought I was doing this really original, unique thing. And I'm like, I'm just another guy from Toronto who's come and taken a vacant storefront and opened a wine shop. That is like the most typical gentrifying person ever. But
it's also necessary just because, like, you don't have to give me how much rent is here or lease or whatever it is. How much more expensive would it be if you were on Dundas East?
It would have been impossible. We're talking about 5 to 10 times the rent for real on a good street in Toronto. And I mean, there are advantages to that. Now we're opening one in Toronto, not right in prime downtown, but we can talk about that. The barrier to entry in Toronto is certainly a lot higher. And I think there's also an aspect of, again, I was, you know, 25, 26 when we were building this place out. I don't know that I would have been ready to deliver the sort of quality and sort of call it world class or whatever standards that, you know, Toronto, where you have 100 different options and people can sort of expect. Whereas here, I was growing with the neighborhood. People were really happy to see this new thing come into the city. And obviously, wine country being here, there's sort of a different ethos around that. So it was a good decision, I think, for me to open down here in Niagara. I'm looking forward to, you know, relocating myself back to Toronto in many ways personally, but it was good to be in wine country. It was good to actually meet the winemakers and to be able to be around the winemaking 10 minutes away. And I think that has been a really important part of, you know, both my own journey personally and also Archives becoming what it is.
Yeah, and this makes a lot more sense than, let's say, if you were in Ajax or Whitby. And it's nothing against those areas, but they're not as closely associated to farming, or excuse me, to wineries and things like that. I mean, it's my farming, but just in terms of grape growing and wineries, it certainly makes a lot more sense. Is it fair to say that part of your mantra, part of what you want to do here, is to fulfill the O in LCBO, where often the LCBO doesn't do enough to promote that letter of the alphabet?
I really like that.
Yeah. So you're here to help elevate the letter O, where sometimes they don't do it in around Ontario.
100%. And there are two aspects to that. The one is, I think, and you've discussed this many times on your podcast before, how drinkers today are more amenable to drinking Ontario. These sort of preconceptions that our wine is inferior no longer really exist amongst most people from what I see in the shop, but certainly the younger generation. And also objectively, I think speaking, the winemaking is better now in Niagara even than it was 20 years ago. The other thing is, I always joke that this is the wine shop where the winemakers shop, and a lot of that is proximity. But I really wanted this place to be driven by the people in wine country, and that's been the real advantage of being here in the middle of wine country. Is all the winemakers are so close, it's very easy to be around them and for, you know, guests who come in here to meet the winemakers and actually see the people and hear the stories and really like get personal with wine country. It's not just a bottle on some shelf that you grab, but you can actually interact with it.
you were studying politics at U of T, then you're looking more at spirits, and you sort of answered it because of, you know, just the bottle shop rules and because barriers of entry of making your own whiskeys, you know, so hard. But was there a moment for you in all your studying at college, like was there a winemaker, a moment where you, when you just, your love for the fermented grape just hit another level?
It's an interesting question. I know I would spend a
lot. It's not actually an interesting question. It's a pretty standard one.
Yeah.
But I think you said it's an interesting question because you were stalling for a second to come up with an answer.
Yeah, and I'm trying to figure out. You're right, actually. I'm trying to figure out if there was.
And there doesn't, by the way.
I think you've done this before.
I have. By the way, there doesn't need to be. Like, some people have the classic wine origin story. Mm. Other people don't. They just woke up one day and go, oh, no, this is really good. I like it. So there doesn't have to necessarily be, well, this old bottle that Derek Barnett made when he was at Lely, you know. 17 years ago. It doesn't have to be that.
Yeah, I wish there was one bottle. I don't think there was. And part of me wonders if the Niagara College Distilling School was in, you know, Germany, would I have just opened a beer shop instead?
Mm-hmm.
But I would spend, because the distillery at Niagara College is right next to the winery, and there's an excellent tasting room there. And we would spend hours every day, because the stills would be running for 6-8 hours a day and not much going on. And so we'd saunter over and we'd taste wine, and we'd be hanging out with the winemaking students, and we would try all these things. And you know, we'd have a couple hours, so we'd zip off to a different winery every day. And I think I really got into it that way, just, again, meeting the people. And, you know, when you're walking around, you can see the vines, and then you taste the product that was made from those vines. And, you know, you start to taste different vintages, you start to taste different varietals, and you really start to learn. And you can then connect, this is what I'm tasting, this is where it came from, this is who made it, this is why it tastes like this. It really came together for me as this kind of balance between agriculture and science and the art of winemaking and just really good people, you know, in this winemaking community.
Yeah,
I was really pulled into it. So I think it probably came about gradually and then really sort of accelerated during lockdowns when I was drinking a lot of wine and studying wine. Mm-hmm. I really just, I fell into it.
Yeah, that is a classic origin story. And part of what that's about is you fall in love with the wines when, as you said, you see where the grapes are, you see the production, you meet the humans behind it, the owners, the winemakers, the people making the barrels, whatever. And it creates this sense of, you feel a connection. It's the same way you love your favorite actor. Maybe you saw them in an interview and like, oh my God, that's really cool about them. And the more you know about the wine, the more connection you feel, the more you enjoy it and appreciate it.
This is the thing. Like, Domaine Romane Conti could be the best wines ever, but the average person is never going to have any association with it beyond it just being this good label that you spent $2,000 for, you know. You'll never really be able to get that. You can come down here to Niagara and you can rock up to some little shack somewhere and, you know, Marty Werner's going to be in there making sparkling wine and you can chat with him and he'll probably give you a taste. It's accessible. It's accessible to us. And it's this local product that we're making world-class quality, and it's here. And whether you're in Toronto or whether you're here in Niagara or, you know, wherever, it's not very far. It's close. You can be a part of it. You can meet the people. You can actually sort of gain that connection to it. And that's what I wanted this place, Archives, to be about. And hopefully I think we've, you know, really started to hit on here.
What was your first year like here versus now? How different?
First year of operating as a business, or first year of going through licensing?
Let's start with the ugly one. Licensing, the zoning, the government bureaucracy, and all those wonderful things.
Yeah, so I think if there's anything that sort of taught me, if I had some kind of like existential struggle that made me maybe a better person or a stronger person, it would have been we spent 18 months of trying to get this place open license-wise. And this is where I was sort of like, why did I come to St. Catharines? And it was just dealing mostly with building regulations, but also the crazy liquor laws in Ontario. So it took 18 months of trying to get this store was previously a women's clothing shop, and just trying to get through all the hoops to actually turn it, first of all, licensed legally into a bar, because bottle shops still don't legally exist in Ontario. It's just bars selling takeaway. Trying to go through all the zoning, and we had to build 4 different washrooms, and we had to build 15 different fire exits and HVAC, and you name it. It was all my life savings. And then I was able to ask my best friend, who's in Australia, but he did university here at Geordie. And I said, you know, I have this dream to build this shop, and now I don't have any money, and I don't know what to do. And, you know, we were just talking one night on WhatsApp, just, you know, catching up. I was saying, I don't know what to do. I don't have any more money in the city, and they're going to take $90,000 to build a handicapped washroom. And he just says, I've got, you know, unprompted, he just says, I've got $30,000, you know, that spend somewhere, take it, and we'll figure it out later. You don't, you know, don't make me an owner. Don't put anything on paper. Don't have to do anything. Just take the money. We'll figure it out down the road. And that sort of carried it. And then got into more trouble. And so my parents were really, really generous with time and helping me out financially, and my grandparents as well. And sort of the whole family pitched in.
Yeah.
And we sort of got through a bunch of hoops. And then after a year, started getting into more shenanigans with zoning and licensing. And it was mostly around building washrooms. But when you build a washroom, that leads to fireproofing, that leads to HVAC, that leads to everything. And it kept going and going, and I ran out of money again. So I opened, and this would have been the summer of 21, opened a little, I called it a pantry shop, where we were selling all local goods, all Ontario made, food staple items, but sort of elevated. So, you know, fancy sea salt and
right.
Tinned fish and good cheese and all that sort of thing. Things that I could do without getting this liquor license that I needed to open as a bar. And so I did that for a summer to keep the lights on, and that carried me through probably till Christmas. Then I ran out of money again, trying to, now we were stalled on building a fire escape and building structural walls in the back, and it just kept going and it kept going. And the building department here were just unbelievably incompetent, and I'll say it publicly 1,000 times until they take me to court, incapable of doing their jobs. And you can ask any small business owner on James Street or St. Paul Street down here, and they'll have the same story. There's the story is 10 times over.
Is it just incompetence? Is it laziness? Like, because what you're saying is not unique. You hear this all the time, and it always amazes me. Is it that the government hides behind the word safety? Oh, no, safety, 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 safety. And they go over the top on it, and you can't fight it, because then like, oh, so you're against safety, or you're against handicapped people using a bathroom.
Exactly.
When it gets to a point where it's almost like they actively don't want people to have a business.
Well, it seemed to be that way. And I could, you know, take you, if this was a different podcast, to 15 different shops right now going through the same process.
But yeah.
I don't know. I won't try to understand their motives, but they don't like me. I don't like them. We'll leave it at that.
Fair.
And then, so anyway, where were we? We're probably around Christmas of 2021, and the money was out again, and we had to build this new fire exit in the back, and that was going to be another 50, 60 grand. And so I'm out of my life savings at this point. My parents and grandparents and friends and everyone's chipped in a bit. And so we launched this crowdfunding campaign. It was basically the all or nothing. It's not going to work unless we can raise some more money. I tried to raise $15,000. We were giving out, you know, future things that you could redeem when the wine shop opened. And it exceeded its goal. It surpassed its goal. There were a number of donors from all over the province who would never hope to redeem their, you know, rewards in the shop. People from Ottawa, people from up north who would almost unlikely to ever come down here, who just said, you know, I hate the system. This needs to change. This is my little bit to try and help with that. And I'm, you know, grateful to them forever. And so we got through. Finally, the last couple of days, we were stuck with building permits. This was after 17 and a half months, and everything was done, but we were stalled on, kept fighting over the width of a handrail on the fire exit at the back that we had built.
Fuck off.
Yeah, so we were on our third handrail now, and if we go to the back, I could show you, there are two overlapping handrails where basically, because one was too wide, one was too narrow, and then the gap between them wasn't enough, and I was like, this is it. Like, so I stormed into the mayor's office. He wasn't in there. City Hall's just up the street. So I went over to the local councilor and sort of kicked on the door. I said, "You come down here right now and look at this and tell me what the hell's going on here." And she did. Sure enough, the next day it got sorted. And then so the last kind of waiting for the final inspection, sort of going through the final inspections, passing health, passing fire, passing all HVAC, passing all the inspections. Final inspection. My dad and I were down in St. Catharines. We were staying at a hotel just waiting because we have to keep going in for inspections and from Toronto, and my parents are in Toronto. So my dad and I were staying at the hotel, and we keep go to the inspection, come back, hang out for the day, go to wineries. Final morning, they won't tell you what time the inspection is. You just know it's going to be 1 or 2 days. So we're sitting around waiting at breakfast at this hotel. I get a call. The inspector says, "I'll be there in 5 minutes. Midway through breakfast.
I'll be there in five minutes.
The City Hall's right up the street, right? So I raced down from the Holiday Inn and came in here, and the whole thing was, you need to show me that there are 30 chairs, because the capacity was listed at 30, so you need to show me 30 seats. I grabbed the breakfast restaurant at the Holiday Inn. I didn't have 30 chairs, so they gave me, here's all our patio chairs, here are a couple extra chairs, and I just sort of drove them back and forth from the hotel to the shop and told the inspector, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Move them in the back door. Put all these mismatched restaurant patio chairs all over the place just so it, and the inspector comes in and says, "These are the chairs you're going to use?" I said, "Yeah, I might, you know, paint them, reupholster one or two, but yes, counted them. There were 30 and said, "You're done. You're good. So race back to the hotel, and the breakfast had gotten cold, but I guess by this point everyone knew what was going on, all the waitstaff. So I came back and they brought out a thing of sparkling wine and a fresh hot breakfast, and we sat there and celebrated, and yeah, got the license a couple of days later. So it was
Before we continue, and we'll do this at the end, please promote website, address, where do people go? They need to support this place.
I am incredibly grateful. Yeah, we have two locations open right now. We're in downtown St. Catharines on James Street. We've opened in the last 6 months an outlet in Port Dalhousie in the north end of St. Catharines on Lock Street. And then we are now in probably November, working on it now, opening up in Toronto. This is the big news in the East End. Where? Girard and Woodbine.
Girard and Woodbine.
So Upper Beaches.
Girard and Woodbine. There is a really sketchy bar right on the northwest corner.
Ruby Tuesdays.
Ruby Tuesdays.
Yeah.
Fuck off. Are you going to be near Ruby Tuesdays?
A block and a half away.
I know that because my girlfriend used to live right at Woodbine and Danforth. Her twin sister lives there now. I pass by Ruby Tuesdays. I've still never been in. I've always wanted to go in there for a drink.
I'm sort of tempted to go in for probably like an old Vienna or like a Labatt 50 or something.
Yes.
And buy the bottle and probably just do it. And the idea is very much, like I said, I'm from Toronto originally, but I'm really gung-ho on this idea that there are a lot of people in Toronto who get it about Niagara wine, mm-hmm. Ontario wine, and there are a lot of people who can come to understand this. They just need to be shown mm-hmm. or, you know, given the chance to actually try these wines and meet the people and get the sort of experience we're trying to do down here in St. Catharines. And so hoping it'll be successful. So we're looking to open that in probably a soft launch in October and November and hopefully have everything sort of rolling by Christmas.
Did it go easier than here?
Oh, so far so good. I don't want to jinx it, but
okay. No, I don't want to jinx
big,
it either.
The big trick that I have learned, I learned this with number two in Port Dalhousie, was take an existing liquor license. Never, ever, ever, ever try to build a new one. If I can give any advice to anyone wanting to do this, it's find a restaurant that's closed and take over that space, because it's a heck of a lot easier to transfer a liquor license than apply for a new one.
I don't know what it's like in other parts of the world, other parts of Canada, when it comes to a liquor license, because it seems to me, and I've often described it, that the LCBO is part draconian, it is part paternalistic when it comes to wine and about how, well, we must protect our citizens from wine. And then while we're going to protect you from the wine, we're going to do it in a really difficult way. Getting a liquor license, why is it so hard? Why is it the government is so fearful? When my family's got a place in Naples, Florida. And in Naples, Florida, the last time I checked, they weren't rioting and burning the streets down. And in Naples, you could get, you know, beer and stuff at the gas station. And you could get wine at the grocery store. And there was the giant Total Wine. And then there was the little more boutique bespoke wine store. And they all existed. And they've existed for decades. And it didn't lead to the crumbling of this town. What is it about us, our province, our thought, like just when it comes to all things booze?
Now, it's an interesting time to ask that question, because what's today, the 27th of August?
It
we're
is.
Like 4 days away from having day penners all of a sudden, having beer and wine in, you know, convenience stores all over the province.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there are two answers to this question. One, I wish I knew why, but there are certain elements of the population here, and I don't think I think it's a rapidly declining segment of the population, but we still have this really weird, like, I don't know if it's a Protestant ethic or what, where we're just really afraid of alcohol and marijuana and people drinking in the parks and people being out after 2 a.m. and all this. And that's changing hourly, I think. Like, we're probably the most permissive location now for sport betting and legal weed. And now you can drink in parks in Toronto. And it's all these things that are completely normal. And we're getting there. It's just the laws and like this older class of people who are making these laws are, I think, behind the times, and it's really changing really quickly right now. Now, the reason it took me so long is an offshoot of this, but like all the delays weren't really liquor laws so much as the fact that bottle shops don't exist in Ontario. And so this bottle shop we're in, and it's a bar legally. And so we had to build a bar. So I had to have HVAC that can change the air in here at the same rate as a nightclub, because nightclubs are bars and bottle shops are bars. I had to build four washrooms, even though this is, you know.
You have four washrooms?
Four washrooms.
You have four washrooms.
I have four washrooms. The capacity is 30. but because when you're building a bar, there is no differentiation between a place where people are just doing shots all night and there's a DJ versus, you know, a place where you're sitting and having a glass of wine or taking a bottle to go, because bottle shops don't exist legally in Ontario and still don't, even though we're about to have, you know, every 7-Eleven is going to have a wine rack, and that's fantastic. But that there's still no bottle shops in Ontario. Either you are a now convenience or grocery store selling alcohol, or you're lucky that you're either the LCBO or one of these grandfathered in corporate monopolies, or you're a convenience store, or you're a bar. There's no bottle shop. There's no place where you can, even though these now exist all over the place and they're lovely and people love them, but there is no legal classification for a place where you can have a glass of wine and also probably buy a couple bottles to go. It doesn't exist, even though it's completely commonplace in a lot of other provinces and most of the rest of the world. We're getting there. We've still got a ways to go.
Another reason to come here on James Street in St. Catharines, you'll never have to wait in line to get to the bathroom. Rented an Airbnb yeah. with four people and there's one bathroom. Here there's four of them. That's crazy.
And the funny thing is, because I took over this space in Port Dalhousie that had already had a liquor license, it's got one bathroom, you know, and the capacity there is 28. So, you know, you figure that out.
All right, let's get to more fun stuff. How much wine do you got? How much wine do you have right now? What's, you don't have to give me the exact number, but what, like if people, you know, if people are coming in, of course, when they hear this, it'll be a couple of weeks. What should they expect in terms of what they can buy here?
So we're always rotating. The idea is seasonality and new things and interesting things. They're probably, right now, somewhere between 60 and 70 wineries represented. We've probably got 500 bottles in here and also a little beer, cider, spirits. We're always trying to rotate. So, you know, you're not going to come in and get a bottle and it's gone forever the next week, unless I've done something wrong or it's a really small batch.
Yeah.
But I have one Chilean winery in here right now, and I've got one bottle of Chardonnay left from British Columbia.
Which one from BC?
Incomeep Cellars.
Yeah. I visited them. Yeah. They're
beautiful.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, everything in here is Ontario, and you know 90% of that is here in Niagara. And the idea is smaller wineries, breweries, distilleries too, but wineries primarily, that you won't find at the LCBO, you're not going to find at the wine rack. Often they're these virtual wineries, you know, where you can't physically visit them in person. It's a brand. It doesn't actually have a physical location. And so a lot of the wines here you just can't get anywhere else, which is always fun, like this rosé we're drinking.
Yeah, which again, is nice. And a couple questions ago, if people wondered why I talked so long and I was saying draconian, paternalistic, Robbie was very nice. He was pouring more rosé. The cork was a little bit tight. And in my business in radio, the one thing you have to be able to do is fill time. So that's why that question meandered a little bit longer.
And now you've got a happy and beautiful looking glass of rosé.
Exactly. So, you know, do you by the glass, or is it just people come?
Yeah, so we do lots by the glass. The cool thing we do, so we always have a couple of things open by the glass. The cool thing we do is we call it $10 corkage. So whatever retail is, let's say a bottle's $30 to take it away. For $10, you can open it here, have as much as you like, and if you don't finish it, we'll recork it and you can take it home.
Perfect.
And then the new thing, this is literally within the last 2 hours, we finally got approval. We just built a kitchen in the back here. We have a chef, so we're going to start in the next couple of days doing a food program. We'll have charcuterie, tapas. Again, we're going to take the same ethos of local in Ontario, and we're going to try to use local ingredients wherever we can. But like just got the final approval, you know, an hour before you walked in here, Matt.
Oh, wow. Congrats on that.
Thank you. So we've got a kitchen. So James Street will have a chef full time now, and we'll have hot food and we'll have charcuterie. Then the Port Dalhousie and then the Toronto location, we're going to bring in sort of prepackaged charcuteries and pâtés and spreads, and we might, you know, bring the chef in one night a week for oysters or something fun, but we'll always have little food items, you know, in the fridge that you can take away or you can open up and have with a glass or a bottle.
Are you planning on moving back to Toronto?
I have put my apartment up for rent, and I will, after Grape and Wine Festival down here, which is last weekend of September, I am going back to Toronto.
You know what it's, now, are you going to live somewhere close to the establishment, I hope?
I will be along the subway line. I'm going to be 6 or 7 stops away on the Danforth line.
Okay. I'm just because, you know.
Oh, I know. The commute's a little bit easier.
Yeah. Like, you know what you're leaving. Like I left basically Henrietta Pelham to get here. And, you know, that's like 10 kilometers, 8.3 kilometers. And it took like 10 minutes. Those days are done. You know those days are done when you move back to Toronto.
And I'll tell you what, I do this QEW commute probably once every other. I've got my family in Toronto. I've got my girlfriend in Toronto. We have the cat. I have home cooking. So I'm already doing that, you know, once every other week. And I kind of want to kill myself in the summer. And now this is going to be probably every week, multiple times a week. And
yeah.
So I don't know. If I make enough money in Toronto, I'll just buy a boat and, you know.
That is the dream. That is the
dream. Skidoo in the winter. We'll go.
Yeah, skidoo. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I'm not looking forward to that. This is my one thing. I always, whenever people in Niagara will always talk to me, oh, we're going to Toronto. I'll say, park the car at Aldershot or Oakville, go and take the train. And then I can't do that because I always got wine and laundry and all the things in my car. And I'm always like, why have I done that? How have I ended up here? You know, been on the QEW for 3 hours and we're in Mississauga. And anyway, it'll be more of that, but there'll be wine.
How important is it to find the lesser expensive Ontario wines? And I've said this many times, anyone who buys a $70 bottle of wine in Ontario, it's expensive, but again, just know the owners, the winemakers, they're not making massive profit. It's a very thin profit line. Everything is going into that bottle of wine. But I have discovered that Henry Appellum's got great Bordeaux blends that aren't expensive. Featherstone, Suan Staff. There's lots of Flat Rock. Like there's a lot of the Creekside Syrahs, great stuff. You can get a Creekside for like $16. How important are those wines to getting people in the door of places like this?
This is a big challenge for me, and I think this is probably one of the main sort of aspects of my job, is trying to always present good value, whether it's $15 bottle, whether it's a $90 bottle, it has to justify it. And that is incredibly difficult because of the markups structure in Ontario. And it's even worse as a bottle shop because we're buying at basically a 10% discount off what the wineries can sell. Like, I can't compete with the LCBO price-wise. There is no possible way, and this may change in coming years. Probably early 2026, they're talking about changing the markup structure, and I hope they do, because we'll be able to be more competitive. And so the big challenge is trying to present good value. And I always say, like, if you are going to charge whatever you're going to charge as a winery, if you're in the shop, it's because I believe in what you're doing, but that wine has to represent that value. And I mean, you can, this is the thing, it's hard for us to compete with Spain or Chile or these places on an $8 red, and it's probably going to be decent because things cost more here. Labor costs more, land costs more, everything costs more, the climate's harder, everything, forgetting the markups and the taxes and all that nonsense that we do here. But on the higher end, like I say, if you spend $10 more than you might at the LCBO, if you might buy that $15 bottle, if you go up to $25, you can really, really get good value in Ontario. Because French wine, you're spending hundreds, thousands of dollars for a good bottle. It is really hard to spend more than $100 on a bottle in Ontario. And if you spend, really, if you spend more than $25 a bottle, it's going to be a gem almost every time here.
Yeah. Yeah, I've done, like, say, On 7 Chardonnay. They're higher end stuff, like $65. You know, that's gangbusters. If you're a Meursault fan, but the recession has made it, or the economy has made it so you no longer can drink Meursault, but you still want to spend, you know, decent amount on a Chardonnay, then you go to like 07 or, you know, Nathan or Dobbin or you know, or Batchelder or something.
And there's
like
more
that.
And more of these really, really good sort of high-end wines that are coming out and that are as good, if not better, I'll fight anyone on this, that are as good or better as anywhere in the world in certain varietals and certain vintages and certain types. Like, I just had a 2015 Cave Spring CSV Riesling a couple weeks ago, and I will take any German Riesling, any Alsatian, anything, bring it on against that. Wind, I'm telling you which one I'm going to pick every time.
That's a hell of a thing to say. And I agree. And by the way, I love German Riesling. I love it. But yes, in terms of sometimes the price point, you can do better. That goes to one of the questions. You got some old stuff here. Yeah? Flat Rock Cellars, OH Chardonnay, Flat Rock Riesling 2015. I think that's also great for the consumer because it's harder to find older wines at the LCBO.
Yeah, and I'm really lucky. And again, this is part of being in Niagara, is you get to meet the winemakers, you meet the people, and sometimes, especially with Flat Rock and some of the other wineries, will say, hey, come to our library. Let's see what old stuff we have. You can sell this. No one else can have this. But, you know, it's a very symbiotic thing where the wineries are grateful for archives. I'm grateful for the wineries. And we sort of help each other out. And I get access to a lot of wines that we can sell here that normally other people don't. Southbrook, they're really good for this too.
Southbrook is great for library. Flat Rock, a little while, like a couple months ago, I tried their 15 Pinot. It blew me away. I was back there last week and they're like, sorry, the wine club, there's no more of it. I got the 14, still excellent. But yeah, like I appreciate those wineries that have it. And then if you have access to it, then it only helps the consumer.
That's the fun thing. That's something that is going to be hopefully a big staple in the Toronto store, where you have a larger market of people who, you know, maybe have the means to afford it more so than in a small city like St. Catharines, where I've got a wine fridge sitting in the Toronto shop right now that's going to just be devoted to, we're calling it fine and rare. So it's going to be back vintages, old things, really sort of the cult wines that are hard to get. And it will be available online through any of the three locations, but it's going to be in Toronto. We're going to have this fridge of, you know, 90 to 100 bottles at any given point. It'll take time to build, but where it's just going to be the best, the rarest, the old stuff, the really cool stuff, and where people can come in and say, my cellar at home is filled with these old European wines. Maybe or maybe not, they believe that Ontario has that quality. And I would like to be able to show these people that, yes, our wines are that good. Try this.
You mentioned you could get it online. What's that website again?
Yeah, myarchives.ca. So we're really trying to be competitive with shipping. It's pretty much free shipping anywhere in the province on, I think it's $150 an order, but it's less in the GTA and less in Niagara. So really trying to make it easy for people anywhere in Ontario to get good Ontario wine through us. And a lot of those wines that you might have to, if you're ordering from the winery direct, you might have to buy the case, you know, and you don't necessarily want to buy 12 bottles of something. So we're trying to make it really competitive, myarchives.ca, but you can always, you know, call me, send me a text. I will answer the phone. If you look up the archives number online, it goes to my cell. I'll pick it up. We'll get you your wine, you know. So it's still one of the perks. I hope this business gets big, and I hope we have 100 locations across the province. But in the meantime, you know, you'll always be able to get a hold of me, and we will get you your wine if you want something cool from Ontario.
Who are, we've mentioned some, but who are some of your favorite producers right now? And that can rotate, you know, at some point, you know, you're into, you know, sometimes you're into more of the bench, sometimes you're in more on Niagara on the Lake, but who are you enjoying right now?
100%. Right now I'm into the bench. I think it's midsummer. I'm liking a little bit of that lighter. I love that minerality. I love that freshness. I'm really into a couple right now. Kern & Co., Adam Kern, he is the winemaker of Cloudsley, but he's got his own little brand. And he's doing these really, really elegant Gamays and Cabs from single vineyard sites around the region. I'm really hot on, as just like a very food friendly, easy, everyday wine without breaking the bank, Fred, which is Fred DeProfio. He's the winemaker at Bella Terra and Amo in Niagara on the Lake, and he's got his own little brand. Very food friendly, easy, affordable wines that are quite nice just with any meal. Really hot on Batchelder's new releases. I know that's sort of an obvious one, and I'll say Kelly Mason as well. Her Matriarch Pinot Noir, she's got some Viognier that's spectacular. Black Bank Hill is another one I'm really hot on. They knew, I sort of have a fraternity of pain with them because they were going through liquor licensing at the same time I was. So we commiserated many times and drank some really good Chardonnay in, you know, 2021, 2022. Really cool little site. I'm hot Niagara on the Lakeside. I'm really hot on Stratus, their white label. I had it in here last Christmas. It'll be back, you know, when people are spending money on wine again. White label, they have a Cab Sauv, they've got a blend. Fully blew me away without any question. The best bottle of wine I tasted it blind, and it was the best. It was the 2020 red blend, the white label of Stratus. It blew me away. Rarely will I say, like, you should spend $200 on a bottle. Like, that is really hard to justify.
Yeah.
It's less than that, but I would say spend $500 on this. Like, I tasted this one up against some other really, really great Niagara wines and world wines that normally I would respect to the moon. And I tried this one blind against them. I was like, every time this one came out as so superior to anything else I've tasted, and I was just blown away.
Is that a Bordeaux blend? That one?
Bordeaux
there?
Blend.
Yeah. Well, they got the money for it. I mean, they invest into it. I mean, Stratus is, yeah, that's one of those places where you don't go there for your Tuesday wine. You know, you don't go there.
No, and this is something that's happening. I want to pick up on this in Niagara that I think in the last 20 years that's really, really propelled this region ahead, is that and it's happening in Prince Edward County now too, is that the sort of people who have made money in other fields in Toronto specifically are coming here and investing and making the investments that we need to really push the higher end forward, whether it's bringing in winemakers. Now we have, you know, two great winemaking schools in the region, but that first wave was bringing in winemakers from Europe or Australia or places that were established. And now it's about bringing in the right equipment and the right vineyard practices and being able to have the means to fund these wineries that aren't going to make money, because this is Ontario, you can't make money on wine really. And so it's a passion project for a lot of these people. And that's really elevating wine. And I think of places like Dobbin or like Lely is another one right now, or On Seven, where Stratus, of course, Two Sisters, where we're really pushing the envelope of what wine is in Niagara and what we can make and therefore sell wine for in Niagara. And it's pushing it higher and bringing more respect to the region and sort of elevating the quality across the board.
Yeah, the Kirby Merlots.
Kirby Merlot is probably a close second for
for
best wine I've tasted in the last year. That completely blew me away.
Yeah, it's it is really good. And again, the main thing is eventually just got to get to normalize it, where I say 100 times, you know, it's you're not buying the $80 wine to have on a weeknight, but, you know, there is the wines you spend money on for Christmas, New Year's, birthdays, anniversaries, and Kirby totally works for that.
100%. And this is the thing. I mean, wine doesn't have to be a crazy expense. It's a small luxury many of the time. And sometimes you want to go all out and do something crazy, and that's wonderful. My big thing is spend a little more, be conscious about what you're buying. It doesn't have to be a crazy luxury, but if you want this to be part of your lifestyle, if you want good wine to be a part of your lifestyle, and you care about good food and good wine, and you know, you spend that extra $10, $15, it can make a world of difference, you know, if you're just sort of at the beginning of the ladder, you know, you're just grabbing whatever off the LCBO shelf. Now, there's a whole world out there if you are prepared to make that a part of your life and spend a little bit more on it and become conscious about it. And, you know, if you're here, you can come to the tastings and you can be a part of that.
How many by the glass do you usually, I mean, I guess that rotates, that changes. What's average for you guys?
That changes. We usually have three or four sort of things open by the glass. I've been pushing more and more toward this $10 corkage model. But now that we have the kitchen here, at least on James Street, we're going to revamp that by the glass program.
Yeah, by the glass can be hard.
Yeah, it's tough to do unless you have the numbers for it, really. And the thing that that we did, and we're going to start doing more again now, is we have a Corvin machine, so we can sort of go through the cork and pull wine out of a bottle without actually opening it. And so that lets us do more wines by the glass that would not necessarily be feasible economically. Like, you can't, if you have a bottle that costs you $100 to bring in, you cannot open it by the glass. You have to charge $100 a glass, you know, it doesn't work. But now we're able to sort of pull, and we're trying to bring this back a little bit more, but where we can pull out without opening the cork, and we can offer more unique and rare wines by the glass that, you know, it isn't just your entry level, you know, LCBO wine that you can find at any place, which, again, that's the economics of it. But, you know, we're here, we have these amazing wines on the shelf. We want people to be able to try it more. And then the other thing is every weekend we'll bring in winemakers, different winery every weekend. And we'll have three or four different bottles open. We'll do tasting flights. And so that's really the way if you want to try new things. Every Friday we do it. Pretty much every Friday we'll do it at James Street, and every Saturday at our Port Dalhousie location. We'll see how things change with Harvest and with the new shop in Toronto. But the idea is, again, meeting winemakers and trying new things.
By the way, good luck getting those winemakers to come to your Toronto location.
Oh, I know. like I said, we'll see how it goes. If I can get that skidoo in the winter, we'll cross that way.
Sometimes it's funny, you know, you're up at you're up at Flat Rock, and you can see the CN Tower, and you're like, oh, if we could just get on a boat.
It's right there.
It's,
I know,
right
and
there.
And they keep talking about it, and this is what kills me. They keep talking about this, but it'll never happen.
Look how hard it was to get a railing here.
Well, exactly.
And you think they're going
to
get
it
a proper
18 fair... months to build a handicap washroom. We're not going to have a hydrofoil.
Exactly. But is there any, before I answer some of this, is there in Prince Edward County? I know, like, because obviously Niagara makes most sense. You're right here. You can logistically, it's a lot easier. You get to have a lot more relationships because you don't have to drive 3 hours on the 401. Is there any thought of, I don't know how much pack you have here?
We do always have some. There's one winery that I'm really hot on out there. A little tiny, called like a garagist producer in that. It's making it in a garage. Last House. Mm-hmm. Little tiny, really good Prince Edward County style Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. And I really like that style of wine, the PEC style or the bench style, where really minerally, really light, sort of ethereal almost. Like I came up drinking wine through Niagara, so I've always had a good palate for acid. Like I don't want these rich, you know, Australian Shiraz. I really, really admire Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, Pinot Noir, sparkling from the county. Last House doing a really good job, but I'll always bring in Grange or Kloss & Chase or some of the smaller producers out there who are doing a really good job. I'd like to bring in more. I think with the Toronto shop being a little bit more in the middle, so to speak, there will be some more county wines. It is an expensive place to make wine, climatically and the land. It's tough. And again, I'm sort of banking on hopefully in 2026 when the market structures are supposed to change in Ontario. It'll make it more feasible to sell more county wine here because I would really like to. But we'll always have a couple. We'll always have a couple.
Robbie, I really appreciate this. I love, you know, to circle back a month or so after the Toronto location is open and, you know, you sort of get settled. But it's a hell of a story. You started very young. You had 100 different obstacles by the government thrown at you to get this started. And yours is a story also just of a friendship, a family, of just how the old Hillary Clinton line or whoever said it, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes more than a village to raise a cool looking wine bar. And this place is like, this is a cool neighborhood here on James. And I've been just, as I said, I've been wandering around here. This is like a really nice space you got here. And when this is done, I can't wait to take a look at all the wines you got here, because I'm telling you, my eyes are always looking at all the labels. But I really appreciate you doing this today, and congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's a lot of fun, and I do feel like we're sort of fighting the good fight, and people have been behind it all the way, and the encouragement has made, you know, such a difference, even in the bad days and in the good days. And, you know, just trying to spread a gospel if you're listening to this podcast and probably understand it. So, you know, we just want to spread the word.
One more time, the address and the website.
Yeah, Archives Wine and Spirit Merchants. We're at 39 James Street in downtown St. Catharines, 17 Lock Street in Port Dalhousie, and I don't even know the address in Toronto, 1879 Girard Street East, I believe, in Toronto.
Girard and Woodbine. Girard, just if you're there, you'll find it.
Upper Beaches.
Go grab a drink at Ruby Tuesday, then come on by here afterwards.
That's it. Or myarchives.ca anywhere in the province.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, iTunes, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.